Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on why healthcare collection agencies need to develop a self-pay operation, also known as early out collections. More agencies are either developing these operations on their own or at the request of their healthcare clients, which are looking for more comprehensive revenue cycle management capabilities from their partners. I'm really excited about the panelists who've come together today to share their insights, and I'm sure everyone else will enjoy the discussion too. This webinar is being generously sponsored by PDC Flow. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Dennis Bennett is a Senior Director of Self-Pay Operations at Professional Account Services. He has spent the past 16 years at the company working in customer service, quality assurance, and litigation along with the self-pay operation. Dennis has spent nearly 30 years in the collections industry, all of it working in the healthcare field. Jay Gonzalez is the president of Action Collection Agencies in Middleborough, Massachusetts. Action Collection Agency of Boston is a 51-year-old collection agency, and ACA Revenue Systems is its first-party arm company. The company serves healthcare providers in New England and nationally. Jay is a past president of ACA International and just concluded a term as a board member for the association. He is an ACA-certified instructor and holds IFCCE and MCE designations, a bachelor's degree from UMass, and a master's degree in healthcare administration from Salve Regina College. Pamela Kirchner is chairman and CEO of BCA Financial Services. She has been employed in the ARM industry for more than 40 years and was a member of a task force assembled by HFMA and ACA International to develop consensus practices to bring clarity, fairness, and consistency to medical account resolution. She is currently a member of ACA International's board of directors, served on ACA's Council of Delegates and numerous ACA committees, advocates on behalf of our industry on Capitol Hill, participates in ACA's Committee of 100, and has earned an ACA Fellow and Scholar designation. She volunteers her time to the board of her local unit, the Florida Collectors Association, and has served a term as unit president. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. It is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. A recording, or today's event is being recorded, and a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And with that, let's launch into today's discussion. Pam, I want to give you the first question. Let's start by establishing a framework for what we're going to be talking about today, because I know it has a lot of different names. Let's talk about what a self-pay operation is.
And thank you. So we've heard it called quite a few things, as you mentioned at the start of the call: extended business office, EBO, day one outsourcing, early out, pre-collect. And basically, it's, you know, providing services in the name of the healthcare provider on accounts that are not in default. And, you know, it's fairly typical for hospitals to place these accounts between, you know, 1 and 60 days following the date of service or the date of balance that becomes the patient responsibility. And the really basic service might include the printing and mailing of patient statements and making and receiving telephone calls. Some hospitals, especially those on Epic, will choose to send out their own statements. But a very simple, you know, day one EBO program would include mailing out of 3 customized patient statements and a pre-collect notice, receiving inbound calls, making outbound calls, payment plan monitoring, some bankruptcy scrubbing, mail return processing. And typically, if accounts are placed at day one, you would keep them for about 120 days. Some of the more advanced EBO programs might include presumptive eligibility scrubbing, participation in a hospital's loan program, mailing of charity applications, posting of the hospital's web payment portal, statement imaging, insurance verification and follow-up, And to go even a step further, more elaborate programs might include staffing to handle inbound customer service calls or lockbox and merchant account management. So run a little bit of gamut as far as the different services provided in that space. Jay and Mike, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here actually. I didn't know if there was a Mike was.
I'm here. Yeah, no, I'm here. Jay, let me ask you. You know, Pam. You know, a lot of what Pam mentioned in terms of the operations and the self-pay are sort of the same things that a traditional collection agency does. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why it needs to be set up differently than a traditional collection.
Sure. Thanks, operation. Mike, and thank you to everyone who is participating on the call this morning. This afternoon. It is different, yet it's similar. And I think the similar, and Pam did a great job of kind of taking it from its very basic form and really exploding it out to all the various possibilities. And I think those possibilities are largely driven by the fact that we in the collection industry have an infrastructure that lends itself to doing this type of work, to doing it on a volume basis and doing it efficiently. A lot of this was driven, I think, back in the day. And I think, you know, when we started to see this stuff kind of coming into the industry, it was probably somewhere, I think, in maybe in the late 80s. In fact, the AC International had a healthcare program that every year the seminars tended to be, the annual conference tended to be dedicated toward this sort of new kind of burgeoning industry. And it's developed over the years. However, there are still some agencies that are kind of looking at it still as whether it's something that they want to get into. And that's a good discussion to have because it's not really easy in a lot of respects, and there are things that you might want to watch for. The similarities are that we have an infrastructure that lends itself to this type of work. We have agents, we have technology, we have the kind of the talent and the orientation, particularly if you're geared to healthcare. So there are some similarities at the very basic level that drive it. For example, you know, and Pam mentioned different types of platforms such as Epic, and they're all kind of nuanced in different ways. So you have to be mindful of that. But the fact of the matter is that you're still going to use your collection system to drive a lot of the processes. You're going to use it to drive your dialer campaigns. You're going to use it, you know, if you're doing the lettering, and that's a discussion to have too, whether who does the letters, the client's going to continue. Now, we've had clients in Epic, some of whom assigned the letters to us, some of whom chose to keep the letters in-house themselves. So that's something that you have to discuss. But you're going to use your collection system to drive a lot of the processes, as well as the data part of it too, where you're going to create your invoicing and things like that. So there is a common denominator between the two, but really where it gets different is that your kind of garden variety telephone collector may or may not lend him or herself well to this type of work. In fact, we found that we've had bad debt collectors, and we do it with two separate companies as well. So we have the collection agency, which is a licensed collection agency, and we're based in Massachusetts, which is some of the folks on the call, if you are licensed in Mass or you're avoiding getting licensed in Mass for good reason, it's a very, very difficult state from a compliance standpoint. So we have two separate companies to do this work. Even though we're all housed in the same place, we separate it. But there's a lot of common technology that's used to drive the processes. But we found that we have some bad debt collectors that were really not great as bad debt collectors, but were perfect for first party work because they didn't necessarily like the adversarial, you know, obviously that's a different type of interaction with the patient or consumer, but they were very, very good because they were much more facilitative. They liked that kind of advocacy, you know, role more than the telephone collection. So there are some differences. There are a lot of similarities, but there are some differences that can lend itself well to this type of work.
And Jay, I totally agree with you on everything you said. So yes, we got into this really in the 80s. Definitely common denominators, but in some respects, it really is a completely different type of service. So, you know, in the early out environment, at least in my humble opinion, I think the primary focus providing excellent customer service with collections almost being a byproduct of the improved communications and patient education, right? Whereas in the bad debt side, you know, your focus is collections while still maintaining, you know, a good public relations. And you're right. It requires so much more customization, so many more technological resource, and somewhat of a different mindset. I mean, I think you have to be extremely flexible. When you're offering an early out program, there's not one that's exactly the same. You know, even when you have a very large healthcare system that might have, you know, many hospitals, each hospital tend to have a little bit of, you know, their own idiosyncrasies that requires you to, you know, to do a little bit of customization. And totally agree with the staff members who are, you know, handling the calls, because it's, again, just a different mindset. We find, you know, behaviors from our bad debt collectors are more, you know, assertiveness and goal orientation. In early out, we really focus on customer service and energy and social comfort. So it's a little bit of a different, you know, person that you're looking for.
You know, that's true. And it's interesting to note, too, that there was a time I found in this industry where, and it's more on the bad debt side than on the early outside, but the emphasis on the early outside I find to be not so much. I mean, you got to hit your numbers, and there's the focus is always going to be on that to some extent. But on the early outside, you find a much greater degree of focus on compliance that's discussed. Sometimes almost would take priority. Sometimes even over performance, because there are a lot of things that you must do. Because you have to remember that in the first party world, you're working as if you're the provider. So it's completely transparent. The patient believes, for all intents and purposes, that they're speaking with the provider. And we don't disclose that we're a different company. I mean, unless you're really pressed, and look at everybody, you know, knows that the doctor's office probably isn't doing the billing and might be doing the follow-up. So I don't think people are necessarily put off by that. But unlike in the bad debt world, where you're clearly, there's a bump in the road, it's a different game now when you get referred to a collection agency. Hence, all the layers of regulation that accompany it in the federal level as well as the state. That's really not the case in the first party world. It's completely fluid, where the patient believes they're speaking to either. So as Pam mentioned, PR. PR is a concern on the bad debt side too. We get that, but it's huge on the first party side because you're doing a lot more customer care. In fact, the difference, a couple of different things. One is when you're talking to the patient, you know, the issue of care could come up. There are a lot of things that it's a different interaction than the bad debt side. And also, in different engagements we'll have from a third party as far as insurances are concerned. You know, we have engagements where we're rebilling the insurances in the client system. Sometimes we're kicking it back to them in work queues to be rebuilt. So that really also requires a higher level agent and more training. For example, in Epic, a lot of our, and Pam's of sufficient size, she might actually have somebody on staff. But in our case, we actually have to routinely send new agents to the provider for Epic training. Even if they know it, they still have to get checked off. And that's a requirement within that in particular environment. So it really does require a higher level, much and a much greater skill set and talent. Because the other thing too to bear in mind is, you know, when you're and then we can get into the technical side, because, you know, payment reporting becomes huge. Reconciliation of your files becomes huge, because you really need to make sure that those are really synced up well, and the timing is good, because you're really working. You may in fact be having interactions with the patient where, even if it's a contingency based, which most of these are, fee structure, there just might not be any money on the table. You know, you might be looking essentially at resolving like what the status of the account is. It may have already been paid before you get it. So you're just kind of working, you're working with the patient, you're assuring them, oh yes, this was paid, you know, maybe the timing was off of the lettering, things like that. So you really, you feel quicker on your feet, I think, with some of these things, because it's just a bit of a, the nature is of the engagement is different in that regard.
And Jay, I absolutely agree. And the other thing that you have to keep in mind is that these accounts are still sitting on the hospital's AR. So there's a lot more scrutiny, you know, they're a lot more aware of the numbers that are sitting out there.
You know, it's true. In fact, we have a client in Boston that we get the AR, I don't know, I don't think it's every day, but as part of our engagement, we have to kind of reconcile to the AR. We have to tie out to what they show. There's a lot of that, because again, this isn't a, you know, a downstream thing where you're getting collection accounts, you know, at 150 or 80 days, or God knows. I mean, you know, sometimes our system doesn't have enough digits to calculate how old the accounts are. This is a very different environment. So, syncing up between the hospital AR, and the hospital will track it. What happens to their AR as if you're in house. I mean, the days and outstanding and all those metrics. You're really in that mix with them as if you're one of their employees.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I want to pause the discussion for just a minute and say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar, PDC Flow. PDC Flow's payment hub offers a single platform for accounts receivable teams to quickly send an invoice, collect a credit, debit, or ACH payment, and obtain a signature in one simple and secure workflow. The software offers text, email, chat, and IVR payment channels, a customizable online payment portal, and robust reporting ideal for debt collection agencies, medical billing companies, hospitals, and healthcare organizations. Programming and customer operations for PDC Flow's national client base have been completed in-house in Ogden, Utah since the company's founding in 2003. I want to thank Don, Hannah, and the team at PDC Flow for sponsoring today's event. And now let's pick up our discussion. Jay, going back to what you were just saying, or what you and Pam were just going back and forth about, you know, clearly there are differences. Clearly, it's a completely, not completely different, but a different animal than traditional debt collection. Seems like there's a lot more hoops, a lot more bells, whistles, you know, I's that need to be dotted, T's that need to be crossed. So let's talk maybe a little bit about what the upside is to kind of going through all of that extra work.
Okay, I can start that off. In some of our discussion points and things that we had looked, things we might want to touch on. I know there was a top discussion point about, you know, what can something like this mean to an agency's revenue that has not been operating in this environment before? I mean, what's the upside? How much can it add? And what we've found is it can be huge. Now, because of our size, I mean, it can be more volatile for us, because if we have a big one, it'll add much more in terms of when we look at our ratio of bad debt to first party. And I can tell you too that if as a company, your value as an agency is really driven to a much better place if you have this mix of business. If you're pure bad debt, and that's fine, it's a great business and you can do well at it. But down the line, if you're looking at how marketable your firm is, if that becomes of interest to you at some point, they're really looking for agencies that are doing more first party. If you talk to any of the M&A guys out there, they'll tell you that they really like to see a mix of the business, and they like to see it even a little skewed more towards the first party and the EBO side of the business. Because once you get, I mean, barring some exceptions, and we all have them, and we've had them, and I do want to touch on at some point when things can go wrong and what can go wrong and what really can be detrimental to keeping these things on the rails. But one of the good things about first party work, unlike bad debt, is that once you get an engagement, once you get locked in, because of how deep you are into the revenue cycle with them and their processes, you really marry yourself to that client. And many clients aren't so apt to be changing horses in the middle of the race with these types of engagements, unlike with bad debt. Bad debt, you can kind of turn the spigot, you can add some, you can drop some, you can, much, much more easily than on the first party side because you're so plugged in to their revenue. As such, it's really important to do it well because these can be very long-term, very profitable arrangements. So that's the upside, that if you're looking at doing it, it can be very, very profitable. But it has to be done right. And there are things, and I won't get into them now because, Pam will probably want to talk about, how much. But we've had some clients where you can actually double your revenue if you bring in a very good size system and it's priced well and you're managing your costs well. And I can talk about a little later about some things that as part of what can go wrong, things that might become part of an engagement that weren't initially part of it, or things you didn't factor in to your pricing that could be a problem. Because you're looking at margins, unlike the bad debt side, you're looking at single digits as you price this. So again, the liquidation rate is well up into the double digits. So there's a lot of revenue there, but you still have to be cognizant of what you're putting into the project when you price it.
So absolutely, Jay, completely agree with you. One of the things that we saw happening is as the total healthcare revenues received from patients started growing, we saw more and more types of business developing products and services to assist healthcare providers, right? That might invade in our space. So, you have companies like Experian and TransUnion that are putting emphasis on selling products and services to assist healthcare providers in collecting more from patients, while, of course, improving the patient engagement, because patient experience, patient satisfaction, patient engagement, those are the buzzwords that are out there. So when you see more and more, either letter vendors expanding their services to, include online bill pay, automated pay by phone systems, merchant account management, it's more competition coming into our industry. And so I agree with Jay that the more we can do in this space, the more tentacles we have, in our clients' offices. And so it's much more difficult to, replace an early out vendor who is has all of these services than it is perhaps a bad debt, arrangement. And totally agree in that it makes a dramatic difference in your revenue. At this point, our organization is about 75% extended business office, and we've grown dramatically. And yes, absolutely doubled our revenue. And it's extended business office, of course, is so much more than simply, accepting self-pay balances to collect on. Like we talked about earlier, it can be FTE staffing. When you start talking about taking, overflow inbound calls that are going into businesses, you can bill that at an FTE rate. I talked to, a healthcare provider this morning who told me that, he's only answering 43% of the calls that are coming into his business office. They need help. Many, many hospitals need help taking those inbound calls. And so again, just another service. Once you get into the early out space and you really listen to your clients and you understand what their needs are, you develop the services, to attend to their needs. And it becomes a very long-term partnership.
We found too, as Pam brings up a good point, is that it's not so narrowly defined that you're just looking at, call center and eight agents and making calls and taking inbound calls and doing letters. Sometimes we found too, we found this both on the hospital and the physician side. And the other point I didn't want to lose sight of too is to not necessarily box yourself into, hey, even if you're a small agency, say, well, look, you know, how are we going to compete with these big, huge national companies, the big regional companies that are kind of locking down a lot of the hospital business? Well, there are other businesses, there's other business out there too. And what I've seen over the years is we're, you know, back in the 80s when this kind of stuff was starting, it was mostly hospitals. We're seeing, as you've seen on the bad debt side, you're seeing a lot more opportunity within in the physician space and in the other, you know, kind of ancillary type services, because if there are receivables that need to be worked, you know, don't just limit yourself to hospitals, because everybody's having the same problems generally. Everybody's having, you know, resource issues, staffing issues, IT issues, phone issues. So we provide that, we can step in and, you know, into the breach there for them and be that solution. So don't limit yourself to just thinking that you can't really compete in the market, because there are other opportunities besides hospitals. But one thing we found too is, as we started to do this work, we were surprised, actually appalled kind of, that of some of the lack of sophistication with some of these clients, particularly as it applied to payment processing solutions. So, I mean, it was so bad at one point where we're getting payment credit card information, you know, from the patients, and there was nothing we could do it. So we were like faxing or emailing the credit card information to the clients to post. So you know, obviously that's something you want to address, but we had clients that didn't even have payment processing solutions. So what we did was we partnered with a payment processing vendor, and we actually kind of remarketed that service to our clients. And we get a piece of the revenue. So, and you know, it's completely transparent. You know, we're open about it. And we still have, I think, a first party client that we don't do anymore. They brought it back in-house, but they still kept our payment processing solution. So we're still getting residuals from that. So if you kind of keep your eyes open to other opportunities within an engagement, you might be able to provide solutions just beyond the specific type of work we're talking about today.
Definitely, and this is where you can turn to your vendor partners, right? Because they're providing all of these services, so partner with them, do it together. But Jay, neither one of us mentioned the greatest benefit of moving into the self-pay operation, which is less lawsuits and bad debt.
Right.
I can't
just
find any
minor
words.
Detail. Pam and I are both going through some of this right now. We've shared some horror stories recently. That's absolutely true. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't recognize it, but all of us of any size or of any volume, particularly in certain parts of the country where you might be in more litigious environments, Florida, you know, Massachusetts, New York, California, that some tough states for consumer plaintiff counsel, and that virtually does not exist in the first party world, because you're not under FDCPA. I mean, there are some aspects of you know, consumer protection that still comes into it, obviously. You know, there are state consumer protection laws that apply to creditors, but you're dealing in the creditor world, so this hyper technical stuff that, you know, your letter said this, or you didn't say this, or you call, you know, those virtually don't exist within this environment. That's a good point, Pam.
I'm sure everyone's going to be rushing now to open up their, if they don't have an early out, they're going to be rushing now to start one just for that reason alone. Here's a statistic that I wanted to throw out to both of you, and apologize, Dennis. Dennis has been tied up with some issues in his office, and is hoping he's going to make the second half of the webinar. But in case he doesn't, I'm sure we're off to a great start, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the discussion. But let's throw this statistic out there. According to TransUnion, patients experienced an 11% increase in average out-of-pocket costs during 2017, and the average out-of-pocket costs have increased 30% since 2015. How well do you feel hospitals, health systems, and healthcare providers are adapting to this increase? Pam, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. So I think that they're definitely acknowledging it. I think that if you look out on HSMA or AHAM, go to any, you know, healthcare conference, it's all about self-pay, collecting the out-of-pocket costs. It's all about the patient experience, patient engagement, consumerism in healthcare. So I think that hospitals are definitely acknowledging that patients are, you know, looking for better communication. They're looking for transparency in regard to costs. They're looking for intuitive tools to help them compare prices, you know, in order to make the most cost-effective healthcare decisions. Hospitals fully understand that patients want the same, you know, experience that they receive from other industries with the same type of flexible payment options. Acknowledging that and doing something about it, I think, are two different things. So I think that they have made progress, but I think that they had a really, really long way to go. And so they're definitely, you know, looking, they're looking for different payment options. They're looking at, you know, loan programs. They're definitely looking at all sorts of technology, you know, to help them in this space. But again, I just think that they had such a ways to go. And so they're, you know, we're seeing, you know, the MyChart through Epic. So they're building all of these patient portals. They're, you know, they have these mobile health apps. They have, you know, these electronic communications that are inspiring the engagement. They are, you know, hiring. There's a new, you know, C-level, you know, staff member, which is, you know, the patient engagement officer. So again, I think that they're making efforts, but I do think that they have a ways to go.
You know, it's interesting. I, you know, being involved with ACA over the years and, you know, nationally interact with a lot of people. I remember, oh, I don't know how many years ago it was now, but one of the things about Massachusetts is that we were sort of ahead of the curve as it pertained to healthcare reform. Governor Romney at the time, and probably wanted to get some national exposure probably by doing this, but one of the things that we actually had what kind of was a little bit of a model for the Affordable Care Act here in Massachusetts. And I remember being at the healthcare seminar, and all these other things, people coming up to me and say, hey, Jay, what's going to happen? You guys going to go out of business because you're going to have, like, you know, everybody's going to have insurance and it's going to be, there's not going to be any work for you to do. And and everybody's really nervous about, you know, was this a harbinger of things to come on a national level? As it turned out, now, as we all know, the opposite really occurred where, and we're all, I assume everybody on this call, collection agencies, it's all, you're also running a business, so you also look at your healthcare. You know, every year when you have to renew it. And what we've seen, as we all now know, is this huge increase in the this out of pocket for the patients in form of copays and deductibles, and they're huge. So what this did too was this was kind of overwhelming for the hospitals. And as Pam pointed out, they're scrambling to deal with these things and making sure they're, you know, they're estimating the out of pockets for the patients and these the early upfront discounts and all this kind of stuff. But it's really created a whole other kind of arena out there for this type of work. And the self-pay out of pocket is just burgeoned. And as Mike pointed, you know, just within, you know, from 2015 to 2017, but it even extended even prior to that, which created this tremendous need on the part of hospitals to properly, you know, kind of handle this self-pay, these increased self-pay portions for the patients. And they turn to us as resources for that because they just don't really seem to have it internally. And so it's been, I mean, even if you're just doing bad debt, you've seen it, you know, as it kind of trundles down through the revenue cycle to the bad debt side. But there's a lot of it when the self-pay determination occurs from that one, you know, 0 to 120 days, there's a real glut of work out there that people are looking to us. So I don't know. I mean, you never know. I mean, if you watch just pay attention to the political discussions now where, you know, who really knows where we're heading, but we've had these scares over the years. You know, we're going to end up in a single payer environment where, you know, it's going to be a European model where really, trust me, there would be no self-pay balances in an environment like that, because when I was president of ACA and really went around the world. Everywhere we went, we really had socialized medicine. So it was Europe or Australia, those places. So those collection agencies largely worked telecom, credit cards, you know, I don't know, maybe student loans, but there was no healthcare business. Here it's very, very different in our country. And I don't foresee that really changing as long as we're going to have this, you know, kind of public-private mix. But this self-pay issue has been huge, and we need to continue to be prepared to address it.
Jay, you mentioned something earlier in talking about sort of the increased compliance demands on this side of the business. I was wondering if maybe you could expand a little bit on that, because I think that there are some, you know, some interest or some questions coming in about that.
Well, I know that there are some issues that we're hearing more and more about over the last few years. For example, you know, being compliant as a with the 501R and things like that, particularly if you're, again, bearing in mind that we are, for all intents and purposes, we are the provider. So we have to behave in a way that's consistent with their credit collection policies and, you know, what they do and what they, you know, how they engage the patients. So you really do have to make sure that you're totally cognizant of their policies and that you adhere to them. You know, there are also things too, like, for example, one of the things you have to make sure you have, and one of the things that I think can also go wrong, would be from a tech sort of infrastructure standpoint, as it pertains to, say, calling campaigns. You know, like in terms of, you know, what are the components and the metrics that drive your calling campaigns? You know, attempts that you make, because we have clients, for in fact, that want to see, you know, our dialer, want to see all the detail from our calling campaigns, you know, the attempts that we make, the abandonment rate, you know, all of those kinds of different things. So there's a lot of scrutiny that's not just about the recoveries. It's really about, you know, what are you doing on each account? You're hitting those touch points that they require you to hit. So I think that part of compliance has to be in play. Pam might have some more more extensive, you know, knowledge about that.
So definitely, you know, a couple of years we were hearing a lot about 501R. All of our agreements had to change. The language on our statements had to change. A notification of extraordinary collection activities. So lots of changes there. That has kind of calmed down this past year. What we're seeing more and more, of course, is PCI compliance. They want those certifications, a lot of scrutiny when it comes to privacy and security. They're asking for SOC 2, so a lot more in that area than we've ever seen before. Totally agree with Jay that we are getting so much more scrutiny just in our actual, workflows and activities. They want the abandonment rate to be less than 5%. They, you know, want your hold times to be very reasonable. They want to make sure that you're reconciling inventories, if not daily, weekly. We've also seen, because of, you know, the age cap scores, we've also seen a lot of hospitals that are, you know, using Press Ganey to do, you know, surveys, and we're a part of that. So, you know, when those surveys come out, our clients want us to sit down and say, okay, you know, patients are concerned about this or that, and then we have to build work plans to improve, you know, the patient satisfaction rates based upon those surveys. So again, I would say yes, a lot of compliance concerns that you don't necessarily think about too much in bad debt, a lot more scrutiny. And then the other thing to be mindful about is your state laws, because many times as a collection agency, you think, oh, well, you know, there's not a licensing requirement if I'm doing first party. Well, in some states there are. And so you have to really, understand those.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, in Massachusetts, and probably in most of the more consumer-oriented states, you're going to find this. And we have in Massachusetts, for example, a very activist, as she's been described as Attorney General. And what they've put into place, the AG has put into place in Massachusetts laws, consumer laws, they're almost parallel FDCPA. So things that you know you can and cannot do in dealing with consumers. So you have to really, really be mindful of that at the state level as much as at the federal level. State levels, like Pam mentioned, there's a lot of data security requirements that they have. So there's a whole other layer of compliance that you don't often think of. The other thing, too, that also kind of maybe complicates the mix a little bit is where you have agency management vendors. So there are some vendors out there. I think Pam mentioned some of the TransUnion, Equifax, experience have, but also there's the Conant platform out there through which whether it's bad debt or first party, you're transmitting data back and forth through their platform. And they're also measuring, because they essentially advocate for the client, for the provider. So they're looking at you and they're looking at how you're working your inventories. And it's a little bit different on the first and third party side, but for the most part, they're looking at you know, what you're liquidating in the various buckets, the aging categories, the balance sizes, you know, and really, you know, really kind of drilling down very deep into stuff that people didn't really look at too much. And they're back to the provider and they're sharing the information back to you and your competitors. Everybody can see who's doing what, how well they're doing. So that's something that you have to be love. In fact, one of that company, in particular, Conant, also markets products to providers that deal with this whole issue of patient satisfaction, where they kind of conduct, you know, this research and this, and you know, because if you think of it, really, when a patient enters a, let's just say inpatient for our purposes, patient enters a hospital, virtually, aside from like whatever drove them in the first place, where they, you know, with the physician, but once they enter the facility, they're going to start with someone in financial services, whether it's, you know, registration or pre-admission, or, and they're going to probably end up with somebody in financial services talking about maybe what their bill is, something like that. So financial, what we do really colors a whole person's experience with a healthcare provider. So, you know, we can make or break it sometimes for our hospitals if we don't do things right, because so much of it now has to do with financial, you know, the whole financial services that are provided and how they impact a patient. So we have to make sure that we're mindful of that, and how we kind of participate in that process is really critical in how we represent our clients.
The other thing, Jay, that you mentioned, which again, we can talk for hours and hours on the subject, but you know, the whole segmentation, right? So you have hospitals who say, okay, well, I want to outsource only a portion of my self-pay. So I'm going to keep my high propensity to pay accounts for a certain period of time, and then I'm going to outsource my lower propensity to pay. That model might look really, really different between your hospitals and how you work those accounts in-house. So again, that's just a whole other subject matter that we could go off on for hours. So, Mike, we won't. We'll let you ask the next question.
We'll save that for the next webinar. There are a number of questions that have come in, and we're getting close to running out of time. So let me, I want to sort of stick a pin in what I've got and see if we can't get to some of these. Again, if you have a question, enter it into, you know, type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll do our best to get to these. There are a couple of questions that I think we can kind of lump together. One is, what's a competitive rate for early out services? And the other is, what's the commission compensation model for first party collections? For example, do they work for a certain percentage of money collected or for a fixed salary? So either one of you want to tackle those?
Pam, go ahead and start. You probably have more experience with that.
So the early out rates obviously are going to depend upon a lot of things. You know, the age of the account, you know, something that's placed at day zero is going to be completely different rate than, you know, placed at day 60. the average balance on the account, whether or not you're going to print the statements, whether or not, what are all the other services that you might provide, and then whether or not you're going to retain discovered insurance. And I hate to put this number out there because I was absolutely appalled when I saw this, but I am aware of some organizations in our industry that are offering rates as low as 3.5%. That's the lowest that I've seen it. And then, of course, it can go, you know, all the way up to, you know, 10% based upon, you know, age and all of the other factors that, that I've already talked about. And then the other thing that we want to consider is, and I think I saw a couple of questions about this. So, you know, there's the finance options that hospitals have. So, you know, we have a number of healthcare systems that say that if a patient can't pay their account off within, you know, 3 or 4 months, then we have to refer them to, you know, a loan company or the finance company to help assist them to finance their healthcare debt. How is that working? You could charge a flat fee to do that. So if you're going to kind of pre-qualify this individual before transferring them over to the finance company, you can charge a flat fee for that. I think, you know, Jay alluded to the fact earlier that sometimes you get accounts that know, are not actually, you know, they might be adjusted. So you might charge a flat fee for that, for discovered insurance. If you're not able to keep the insurance, perhaps you'll want to charge a flat fee to do insurance verification. So it's kind of all over the board. Jay, is that?
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned found insurance, because that's become, I don't know if it's a newer thing, but it's just become more of an issue lately, not on the bad debt side, because we have clients where we do first party and third party. The bad debt side, if we're doing the insurances, we follow up with insurances, gets reported. You know, obviously we all know how we have to watch that kind of closely, but that we get credit for it. But on the first party side, it's not quite the same. You find that what Pam referred to, the discovered insurance issue, where you're usually given a flat fee if you discover the insurance, kick it back to them, and they'll rebill it. Some of your engagements, though, that if you're in the system, and a lot of the, you know, some of ours too, we're actually rebilling the insurances right within the healthcare system. So you tend to get credit for that if you're kicking it back to them, it goes into like a work queue or something. You don't. But the other thing too that Pam mentioned, and I mentioned earlier, is, I mean, I know we're talking about, you know, first party work, and we're talking about forward flow kind of stuff, but sometimes there are other things that you might, you know, might have an opportunity to take, and you might want to take them, which is a little bit different. And that might be certain things like AR work downs, or if someone's going through a conversion to a new system, there might be an AR that they're not really going to deal with. But, you know, so you get it, you look at the age and you look at the pay classes, and you kind of figure out maybe what's there, what's got some life, what you can go after. But at some point too, there might not be any money. There might be, you know, credit balances or take backs or adjustments like that. But you still have to kind of resolve those accounts, have a disposition on them. So what we've done is we've sort of had a hybrid fee structure where we might start off in a contingency arrangement, but as it becomes clear that there's not much there anymore, and we're just trying to order things for the client, like what goes where, then we'll shift to maybe an hourly rate for something like that. So just to be, you know, you might need to be a little quick on your feet sometimes, but in your contracts or as you, you know, go through these relationships, you want to be mindful of the fact that there might be some of these kind of forks in the road that you have to be mindful of.
Well, right. So even when you have a contingency fee in your agreement, you probably want to put some sort of flat fee arrangement for all of the things we discussed, sort of ahead of time, because, and I know, Jay, we're not going to have the opportunity to get into this, but you mentioned earlier, what are the things to, you know, be careful right about? Yep. What are some of the horror stories that we've, you know, all experienced? So you you know, you have a hospital that says that they're placing their self-pay with you, the assumption is, okay, self-pay at day zero, that means all of their self-pay, not just street self-pay. Mm-hmm. And after you've already bid and after you've already got the business, oh yeah, no, we weren't talking about the self-pay after insurance. And oh yeah, we meant that you were going to return discovered insurance. So these are all the things that really need to be built into the contract ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had some things go sideways. For example, a couple of things that come to mind. We talk about the Epic environment. We started out with a client, was on one system, converted to Epic. But and this particular client, we get the accounts at 45 days. And that was okay on the other system, because when our letters went out with our phone number on it, which is, we didn't talk about all the mechanics of this, but generally, on the statements that go out, your number is on them. So you're getting the inbound traffic, you're driving the outbound traffic. But in this particular case, we got the accounts at 45 days, which was okay on IDX or whatever system they were on. But then when they went to Epic, Epic couldn't put the phone number on it midstream. Is it day one? So now we've got this 45-day period where we're getting calls and we're working the accounts. And you know, we had to have a discussion at that point, but you gotta watch things like that. The other thing that we had that was an issue with one client was typically in first party projects, the payments all go to the client, unlike in bad debt where you get, ideally you're supposed to get them, but we know that they go both ways. But in first party work, payments generally almost always go to the provider. But with this client, what they did to us was after we already started, they said, "Oh, you're going to get the actual payments." So we became their payment. I had probably five people. We got bins of mail coming in here, and we had to, you know, we had to do the deposit and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't part. So we got to you know, adjust the fee down the line. But that was a huge, very labor intensive process. So you really have to cover those things up front. The other thing is making sure that you have the IT infrastructure and that kind of those resources in place, because in your telephone systems, you have to make sure that those are really solid, because you're going to find that you do have to develop programs. A lot of things really have to sync well. If they don't, it can truly be catastrophic.
Pam, I know you've got a hard stop at 2, so I want to let, before I let you off the hook, literally and figuratively, just wanted to give you a chance if there's anything, any sort of parting words of wisdom or a summary or sort of, you know, what you think might be the most important takeaway from the conversation today, if you wanted to share that before you had to go.
Well, I just want to voice shock when I see that someone noted in the chat box that they've seen rates as low as 1.75%. Holy Moses. I hope we don't drive the rates that low. But you know, in parting, I would say that it's a great space to be in. It opens up a lot of doors. It creates long-term partnerships with healthcare providers. I agree with Jay, more and more of your, you know, larger physician groups are looking for this. Put your tentacles in every space you can, lock down, and that is going to, you know, assure, you know, additional business in the future. I love the early out phase, and if anyone has any additional questions for me, they can certainly reach out to me directly and ask.
Excellent, Pam. Well, thank you very much. Dave, you want to hang on for another minute or two? There's another couple of questions here that maybe you can address
sure.
Before we wrap up.
Okay.
Being that you're a business associate, essentially acting as a covered entity, are you providing the required HIPAA training annual examinations that are required of a covered entity by the HHS?
As far as I know, that doesn't really change whether you're a collection agency or you're the third party of the first part, you know, doing first party work technically as a third party. So yeah, I believe we sign the same business associate agreements that we sign as collection agencies. We sign them with our on our first party work as well. I want to mention one other thing before I forget. Someone had asked and about talked about like motivating employees or incentivizing employees is different from the bad debt world, and it is. But we still try to have something like that because we did want to try to provide that kind of environment too, even on the first party side. So, you know, we would do things like we would have some goals, we would establish, the kind of numbers that we wanted to hit. And if we had everybody would participate with some kind of a bonus. It was generally kind of a flat rate. We didn't do it with, like we do with collections, because you don't really have the same kind of queuing that you do in the bad debt world, because you're really in the client system, but you still want to provide something that people can still get a benefit if they do a good job. And if you determine the profitability of a client, look at what your costs are and try to share some of that revenue with them. I think that tends to help. But it's not quite the same in that regard as the third party work.
Got it. I know Pam offered, to answer any questions if anybody wanted to reach out to her directly. And we've gotten a couple of inquiries asking for email addresses.
Yep.
Everybody should have mine by now. So what I'll ask is, if you just want to send me an email with your interest in speaking to either Jay and or Pam, I'll be happy to forward those on to either one of them to take care of.
Yeah, I would absolutely extend that invitation to everybody. Pam and I did a very similar program at ACA like this. And I'm sure she did, but I know I heard from people and was even willing to have people even going to come to our office and that really had never done the work but wanted to launch it. So, we really believe this benefits our industry to be this type of provider of additional services to our clients. It looks good for us. It benefits everybody. There's plenty of business out there. So, yeah, I'd be more than willing to the extent I can, and I can answer questions, be happy to.
That's your next line of business. You can, help your consulting business, helping collection agencies launch early out operations. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, and it's time to wrap up. And just like I asked Pam, Jay, I want to give you a chance. Any takeaways? Anything that you want to sort of reinforce before we hang up and let everybody go back?
Only that if you do consider this kind of work, that you really do kind of costs that are associated with it. Make sure that you have the resources in place, because it can be great. It can be a great long-term, you can build these relationships, but you don't want to fall flat on your face either. So you need to really make sure that from an infrastructure standpoint, that you have the talent in-house, that you have the IT resources, that you really, every engagement really fully and completely, let's make sure there are no hidden landmines there, that try to cover everything, get everything nailed down up front. Try to get the volumes, look at, so that you make sure that you have the resources in place to do it. I know one time we had to actually do a build out in our building because we have a big project that we had, and, we were able to handle it. But, I mean, to the extent you can, you really need to try to determine up front what you're looking at.
Excellent. Good spot to end up. So before I let everybody go, I wanted to thank Pam and Jay for their insights and for especially sort of doing extra work today, because Dennis ended up not being able to make it. So this was even more work for them. So I really appreciate that. This webinar obviously would not have been possible without their participation. Also wanted to thank PDC Flow for sponsoring today's event. Please go to www.pdcflow.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and who asked questions today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. A recording of this event will be posted to the site in the next day or so. So thanks again to everybody. Thanks again, Jay.
You're welcome.
And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day.
Thank you.